We were going to be flying to the carrier from the US Navy base in Bahrain on a Grumman C-2A Greyhound. An ungainly propeller plane, more war or workhorse than Greyhound. There was nothing sleek or speedy about it. The sky was doing what it always did at this time, waiting for the sun to show up. The sun is the only thing that happens to the sky in this part of the world. That and the stars, which were nowhere to be seen. The temperature was pleasant. A few hours from now, it would be infernal. 16 passengers, all Navy except for me and the snapper, gathered round the back of the Greyhound, also known as a COD, carrier onboard delivery, listening to the safety briefing. Our luggage had been weighed and taken away for loading. Despite my protests, I had to hand over my computer bag as well, something I'd never let happen before. It had to be stowed because when we landed on the carrier, when the plane touched down and hooked the arresting wire, we would go from 140 miles per hour to 0 miles per hour in a couple of seconds. The trap, the first of many words that I heard for the first time, or rather the first of many times that I heard a familiar word used in a completely new way. I knew what the trap referred and pertained to, the hook, the arresting wire, but was unsure how to use it. Did we make the trap? Hit the trap? Come in for the trap? The trap. It existed in isolation from other words, abruptly and permanently arrested from the normal momentum of syntax. Then there was the word cranial. In this context, not an adjective, as in massage, but a noun referring to the head, ear, and eye protectors that were handed out for the flight. Unnoticed, I notice now, the sky had brightened from grey to blue. We put on our float coats, carried our cranials, and filed onto the plane. There were two seats on either side of the aisle, all facing backwards, and two windows on either side of the fuselage, each the size of a dinner plate. It was not the sort of environment in which one could complain about the lack of legroom, though that was one of the striking features of this aircraft. Others were fumes and noise. The ramp we'd walked up winched itself closed and sealed us in. Further safety checks were made. This involved shining a torch as though to see if there were holes in the fuselage. There must have been more to it than that, but holes in a fuselage are good things to check for, obviously. The woman who made these checks was the military equivalent of a flight attendant. She was wearing a sand-coloured flight suit, looked as tough as a woman in an Annie Prue story. There was nothing of the trolley dolly, nothing chicken or beef, or doors to manual about her. But when she sat down in front of me, prior to takeoff, I saw that her hair had been plaited and pinned into a tight bun on the back of her head. The Navy allowed women to keep their hair long. I wasn't surprised exactly, just pleased that's how things were. We were not taxiing, but a noisy increase in power had taken place and the noise was deafening. I'd thought the noise was deafening when we'd first boarded, but back then I didn't know anything about noise or deafeningness. It sounded like the flight of the Phoenix. Felt like it too, even though we were not actually moving, let alone flying. This was the moment, evidently, to put on my ear-pinching cranial. Having done that, I sat there, strapped tight, struck by the undisguised use of the rivet in the seat in front. Everything in the plane was ripped, scuffed, scratched, stripped. Tubes, pipes, cables, and superstructure were all laid bare. Commercial passenger planes from the world's poorest countries outdid this one when it came to frills. Even to compare this plane to anything in the fleets of the budget airlines of the West would give a distorting impression of luxury. Passenger comfort was not a factor in any part of the design process. Having worked itself up to a state of unstoppable intensity, the plane accelerated along a runway for so long it seemed that we were attempting the logically impossible, driving overland to the carrier. At last the ground, glimpsed through the window just behind and to my left, dropped away. We flew over a blur of gulf, but it was neck-achingly awkward, craning backwards to look through the porthole, so I reverted to sitting tight in this silently noisy, vibrating, heavily laden tube, studying rivet patterns.